This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday for another hour of old-time radio crime. We begin this week with yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Fairway Matter, his story from January 5th, 1954. After that, it's Richard Diamond, Private Detective, and the Plaid Overcoat Case, his episode from December 28th, 1951.
For your listening enjoyment, John Lund as...
Johnny Dollar.
That plane crashed, Johnny. Did you hear?
Yeah, I just turned off my radio.
It's horrible.
Who is this?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sam Harris, Columbia.
Oh, yeah, sure. Does your company carry the policies in that airline?
Yes, but I'm not thinking of that. That crash was planned.
Oh, they're definite about it now?
Yes, an explosion. Some kind of a bomb. There were 13 people killed in the plane, and they don't know how many in the house it crashed into. We've got to place responsibility. The company wants to do whatever it can. We've got to find whoever is responsible.
Yeah, sure, Mr. Harris. You want me to go out there?
Yes, we do. The airline representative is a man named Reed. Go out and do everything you can.
Now, for just a moment, what do you say we take time out to talk about Star Roots? Never heard of them? Well, I don't suppose many of us have, but they exist, all right. Now, those of us who live in cities or in other localities where regular letter carriers drop off our mail probably never wonder how mail is handled in places where almost no one lives, where there's hardly anything and not much reason for going there. But there is someone who thought about it and did something about it, our Postmaster General. He saw to it that folks who live in these out-of-the-way places receive their mail. Of course, the post office doesn't operate regular mail routes to these places because there isn't enough mail to warrant a regular postman. But the people in isolated spots, such as prospectors in the Nevada mountains, or trappers in the Alaska wilderness, or Louisiana bayous, are entitled to their mail. That's why the Post Office Department has set up a system of contracting responsible agencies to deliver mail to out-of-the-way places. These special mailmen follow what are known as star routes. Deliveries are made usually to mailboxes similar to RFD boxes that stand in the middle of some barren waste or along a rarely traveled river. Star route carriers use cars, horses, mules, rowboats, dog sleds, or airplanes, whatever they need to deliver the mail. Sometimes they even walk. Yes, the job of the star route postman is a rugged one, and our hats are off to these little publicized employees of our United States Post Office Department.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, Columbia All Risk Insurance Company. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Fairway matter. Expense account item one, $250, cab fare to the scene of the plane crash, which, as you know, covered quite a bit of territory. The Fairway Airlines plane had taken off at 8:20 p.m., had reached an altitude of no more than 600 feet, and then had crashed, setting two houses afire a short distance from the Springfield-Hartford Airport. I got there a little after 9:30. One house had been partially saved, but the other had been completely demolished. The family of four living in it had been killed. The parents of one child in the first house were not expected to live. And beyond, twisted pieces of the plane were scattered across the field. Fragments still smoking, turned white by the foam from chemical extinguishers.
There's nothing to do here, Mr. Stern. Absolutely.
Mr. Reed? Mr. Carl Reed? Mr. Carl Reed?
At least don't wait in your car. We'll let you know as soon as we can. My baby, my baby.
Yes, sir. What did you want?
My name is Dollar, the insurance company.
The insurance company? Good Lord. This is hardly the time to worry about money, is it?
I'm only an investigator. They've hired me to help in any way I can to fix the blame.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Yes. You'll have to excuse me, Mrs. Goodhue. There are some things I have to do. Come along, Mr. Dollar.
She doesn't know about the explosion. She thinks there's a chance the daughter wasn't on the plane, but she was. She was the stewardess.
You haven't told her?
I can let her hope for a couple more hours. Oh, why shouldn't I? I've had to tell so many people. Oh, it's horrible. Horrible. I think even worse than if it had been an accident. When you know it was premeditated, when you know someone planned it, what kind of a person would you have to be to plan something like this?
Yeah, it's hard to believe, Mr. Reed.
But we have proof. There was an explosion in an extreme after section. It destroyed all the control cables to the tail assembly.
I don't suppose the civil aeronautics man is here yet, huh?
No, he's on his way. They're sending one of their best, S.W. Nugent. Captain Linhart of the state police is here, though.
Oh? Well, I'd like to talk to him then. Do you have any idea where he is?
Well, the last I saw him, he was over there by that...
Smith.
But see the group of men over by the hangar?
Yeah?
He might be there. They collect the bodies then. Made as many identifications as possible.
Look, I know it's bad, Mr. Reed, but don't you go to pieces. That wouldn't help at all.
I'll be all right. I'll see you later.
Yeah. I remembered Captain Jim Lenhart from a case we shared last year, and I found him in the group of silent men. Their silence and their expressions told better than words how they felt about the row of sheet-draped bodies on the ground.
How was Reed making out? I thought he was going to pieces a little while ago.
Well, he's still in pretty bad shape.
He's not alone. But it might have been worse. Plane could have been filled.
Yeah. Well, I guess our approach will be to try to find out which victim was the planned victim.
Well, with what we have now, I don't see any other way to start, do you?
No. The possibilities as I see them are murder with a motive, disguised suicide, or a homicidal maniac.
That must cover it. I have men covering the airport in a 2-mile circle around it. Their orders are to question everybody they spot and search every car. I think that's about all we can do tonight.
Well, I'll see you in the morning, then. Sorry with you.
Sure is. Glad to have you on the case. Meet you at my office at 9.
Good.
Here's another ambulance. We can get the rest of these poor devils into the morgue and try to find out who they are.
The next morning, the official findings were released. The explosive had been nitroglycerin. It had been detonated by some electrical means, which it was assumed was connected to a timing device that had not yet been found. Captain Lenhart's men had questioned a number of suspicious characters near the airport without result. But Lenhart himself had received an anonymous tip on a possible suspect, a Wilbur Wheeler, who was a member of the ground crew that had serviced the plane just before its takeoff. Wheeler was shown to the captain's office about 40 minutes after I'd gotten there.
Why did you pick me to come up here? Why didn't you get Straker or Mills? They're over me.
It's just routine, Wheeler.
Routine? You must have a reason. I got a right to know if you got a reason, haven't I?
Why do you think we started with you?
Well, I'm asking you, aren't I?
The stewardess who died in that crash, Shirley Goodhue.
I knew her.
We understand that she meant something to you.
Weren't you in love with her?
Yes.
We understand you made quite a pest of yourself, phoning her at home and waiting for her at the airport.
And then a week or so ago, you learned she was going to marry the co-pilot who was killed. What's his name?
Bill Strand. Wasn't it, Wheeler?
Yes. You're saying that you think I caused that crash.
Well, you wanted to know why you were here.
I told you it was just routine, Wheeler. And it would have been if you'd acted differently, but it sounds as though you're trying to hide some facts from it.
I won't anymore. I don't have any reason to.
Well, then why did you?
Well, I don't know. I've been going crazy ever since I heard about it last night. I was still at the field. I got sick and I had to go home.
We heard about that.
I got home and turned on my radio. And then I heard what caused the crash, the explosion. And they knew that a lot of things I've said and a lot of things I've done were going to make trouble for me. Even getting sick and coming home was bad.
What were some of the other things?
Well, I said some pretty bad things to Shirley when I heard she was going to marry Strand. And I had a fight with him.
You had a fight with him over the same thing?
I guess for me it was really over that. He ordered me around one day and I didn't like it. And that's how it started. He beat me up pretty bad. Said he'd have my job. And I told him that I'd see the day his plane with him in it would be plastered all over some hill. I know what it sounds like now, but it didn't mean anything. It was just talk.
It was plenty of that, all right. You heard enough, Dollar?
I think so.
And that's all, Wheeler.
I can go?
Yeah. Nobody'd be stupid enough to compromise himself the way you did and then pull a job like this.
All right. I sure made a lot of mistakes. I know that.
Yeah. Just be around where we can find you if we want to talk anymore.
I can't go back to that airport, sir. I was going to call them and then quit, if it's all right with you.
Just be where we can find you, that's all.
I will. I'm sorry.
A lot of people are, Whitley.
Yes, sir.
Collins, the man just leaving my office. Name is Wheeler. Wilbur Wheeler. Have two of the boys get on him and stay. I'll arrange to relieve them tonight.
Hello?
Yeah, thanks. What do you think?
Well, I'd like to know what's in Wheeler's background. And I'd like to get a psychiatrist's reaction. Wouldn't you?
We'll learn about him. Now, let's get on with this list of passengers and see what we can get from their survivors.
We spent the rest of the day in the efforts of six more of Captain Lenhart's men preparing files on the 10 dead passengers. One file contained nothing but a name, Rupert Stone. Gotten from the ticket office records is that of a man who had paid cash for space to Augusta, Maine. The Hartford address he'd given was non-existent, and the phone number rang a bakery where no one had ever heard of a Rupert Stone. That one we dropped until the identification of the bodies was complete. Lenhart and I started out to follow up a couple of the others that evening.
This is rotten work.
Yeah, check.
Mrs. Graham?
Yes?
This is Mr. Dollar, and I'm Captain Lenhart of the State Police. We'd like to talk to you about the death of your husband.
No, I have talked too much. Only keeps in my mind the things I saw in that field and the women crying.
We know, Mrs. Graham, but it's our job to fix the responsibility. We only want to ask you a few questions.
You'd want to help find whoever caused all those deaths if you could, wouldn't you?
How can I help?
May we come in?
All right. But only a little while. I haven't slept.
Thank you.
No, Skipper, be quiet. He knows, poor old dog. And very soon he will die. Then I will be alone. Oh, please sit down.
Thank you, Mrs. Graham.
Thank you. Mrs. Graham, your husband...
Yes?
He bought space to Boston, didn't he?
Yes. Martin's brother is buried there. Martin was a religious man, and quite often he would go to visit his brother's grave.
I see.
And I think that's all we needed, wasn't it, Dollar, to recheck his plan?
Yeah, I think that was all.
Then we better go. We're sorry we had to bother you, Mrs. Graham.
And thanks very much for seeing us.
All right.
Thanks very much. Oh, don't bother to get up. You don't have to come to the door with us. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Mrs. Graham.
Quiet, Skipper. You won't come back.
I couldn't cut it. I think that dog did it. Sorry.
Don't apologize to me.
This hasn't happened to me since I was a rookie.
Why don't we have a drink on the way downtown?
No, it suits me. You know Al's on Front Street?
Yeah, that's fine. Any place.
I'll phone in from there and have Collins check me off duty.
Leave.
No, he had a phone. Here, I'll catch it.
$1.60, sir.
That's good enough. Keep it.
Oh, thank you. Oh, here he comes.
Drink up, Dollar. Guess I'll have to waste mine because it seems I'm not off duty.
What happened?
We're back to that stewardess again. The explosive has been checked to her equipment. Lab men say some twisted metal they found used to be a first aid box and that it was in her flight bag.
Well, that brings Wilbur Wheeler back again, too, huh?
He's being picked up now.
You know, many great men have attained the highest office in our land, the presidency of the United States. Can you guess the name of this man? He was a president of several firsts. He was the first vice president to become president through the death of the chief executive, the first president to be married in office, and the first president against whom impeachment proceedings were introduced. He graduated from William and Mary College at 17, and at 26 was elected to Congress. During his administration, a treaty was signed which opened the door to Oriental trade for the first time. If you don't have his name by now, here's one more important clue. On the last day of his term, he signed a resolution providing for the annexation of Texas. Who was he? John Tyler, 10th President of the United States. His life is part of your American heritage.
And now, with our star, John Lund, we bring you the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
I don't like the idea of being loaded into a police car twice in one day with everybody in the block gawking at me.
A lot of people have been loaded into police cars today. They were glad to come in and do anything they could to help clear this up.
Oh, I want to help, too. I didn't mean it that way.
You're glad to hear that. How long have you worked for the Fairway Airline?
About a year and a half, I think.
What'd you do before that?
I want to know why you're asking questions like that. Why did you bring me back here?
Because some new evidence has turned up, that's why.
What does it have to do with me?
It has to do with Shirley Goodhue.
I don't know what you mean. I don't know what you're talking about. I told you everything there was about her and me.
Did you know that she carried a first aid kit aboard the plane last night?
First aid kit? I don't know what you mean.
You don't?
After working there a year and a half?
What did you do on the plane?
Oh, brought food on, checked the water, a few other things.
Things that the stewardess would be involved in. She'd be there with you, wouldn't she?
Yeah, but I don't know what you're driving at, huh? I don't know what you mean.
Where did she put her first aid kit, Wheeler?
Well, why do you ask me that? I don't remember. I didn't notice. They had a place they kept it, but I didn't notice.
Was it open?
I don't know.
What was in it?
Well, if I knew what you meant, I don't know why you're asking me these things.
Look, each stewardess has a kit. They take it off the plane when they leave, and they bring it aboard when they report for work.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The explosive, Wheeler. The nitroglycerin that was hidden in her first aid kit.
Well, I didn't put it there. Well, that's what you mean, but I didn't do it. I don't know anything about it.
13 people in the plane, Wheeler. 4 people in one of the houses that crashed. Probably 2 more in the other.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
Wilbur Wheeler was turned over to the police psychiatrist. The web that was tightening around him was only circumstantial. And the question was, did he know that he could keep on saying he hadn't done it and that we couldn't do anything without physical proof? Or was he innocent? Our last move that night was to go to Wheeler's room. We were looking for a wire that could be checked to that used with the explosive. We didn't find that or anything else that could be a definite help. But a couple of things we didn't find seemed strange.
Hey, He said he came home and turned on his radio. There isn't a radio here. A newspaper's down. See any?
No, I don't.
No, there aren't any. Unless he's got them out of sight someplace.
Well, why would he do that? Nope. None in the wastebasket. You'd think a man so close to this would want to find out what the papers were saying, wouldn't you? Guilty or innocent?
Yeah. Well, I don't know, Dollar. I'm bushed. Let's drop it for tonight.
The next day, Lenhart and I talked to the psychiatrist, who'd spent a couple of hours with Wheeler. The doctor said that Wheeler was definitely suffering from a severe guilt complex. But whether that meant he had actually committed the crime or had only wished secretly that harm would come to Miss Goodhue wasn't clear yet. In terms of evidence, that meant nothing. The lack of a radio or newspaper in his room, the doctor tossed off as meaning merely that Wheeler was hiding from actuality. As Captain Lenhart put it,
if that doctor thinks he helped my mental condition, he's wrong.
That afternoon, a development came from the Fairway office of Carl Reed. He'd been unable to locate another of his stewardesses. And when finally he'd sent someone to her apartment, she'd been found. Shot to death. We met Mr. Reed at the scene of the second crime.
I simply had to get back on the job today. Two of our flights were delayed yesterday because of my going to pieces.
You better watch it now, Mr. Reed.
I don't know if I...
Now, just take it easy. You tried to phone this girl and tell her to report for one of your flights. And when you sent somebody out here, she was found dead, huh?
Yes, exactly. I hadn't tried to contact Alice before because I...
Good.
Well, I knew that she and Miss Goodhue had been close friends and that she must have felt almost responsible for her death.
Why, Mr. Reed?
Why? Well, she was scheduled for the flight the other night. I thought you knew that.
No, we didn't. I wish we had.
But I told you. That night at the scene of the crash, I was talking to her mother, Mrs. Goodhue.
Yes, I remember that. You said she thought there was a chance her daughter wasn't on the plane.
But I told you the other girl was scheduled.
No, Mr. Reed. You made it sound like Mrs. Goodhue thought her daughter was on a different flight. You didn't say anything about another stewardess.
Good Lord.
It's all right, Mr. Reed. The human mind isn't infallible, but it can correct its mistakes. Tell us now.
Well, that's all. With everything else, I suppose it didn't seem important. I know our procedure is less... less exact than the regular companies. You see, the girls often traded flights.
When did you find out about this trade?
Well, not until Mrs. Goodhue told me that her daughter had gone to work that night.
You didn't discuss it with her by any chance?
No, I didn't discuss it. Well, that night and all of it, I...
Then I think we'd better go see Mrs. Goodhue, Dollar.
Of course, I'll... tell you anything I can.
We've just learned that your daughter wasn't scheduled to be on that plane, Mrs. Goodhue.
Well, no, she wasn't.
We understand that she and Alice Turner exchanged flights quite often. But do you know how it happened the other night?
No. Shirley was here at home and the phone rang.
What time was that, please?
Oh, I hardly remember. We'd had an early dinner and...
The plane took off at 8:25. How long before then?
Well, an hour at least. No, it was less than that because Shirley left in such a hurry.
What did she say?
Well, she said that one of the girls was sick and she was going to take her place on the flight. Just up to Maine and back, she said. She said she'd be home soon after midnight. I've never liked rushed decisions and I've always worried when Shirley left in a hurry like that.
She did it quite often?
Yes, they all did it. Six of them live here in Hartford. I never liked it.
Did she trade more often with Alice Turner than with the others, you know?
Oh, I don't think so. It was an agreement. If one of them couldn't work, one of the others would fill in.
Then it's possible that Alice Turner called some of the others before she called your daughter.
Yes, it's quite possible.
Mm-hmm.
The horror of the crime led to the solving of it. Late that afternoon, I'd gone back to my apartment building, and in the corridor, just outside my door...
Hey, your name, Dollar?
Yeah. Can I help you?
I want to talk to you. I think we better go inside.
Well, I'm pretty busy.
Yes, I know you are, but I want to talk to you about the plane explosion.
Oh. All right. Come on in.
I can't stand it anymore. I read about Alice Turner this afternoon. I just can't stand it, that's all.
What do you know about it?
Well, just that all those people killed for nothing, and I'm partly to blame, too, and I'm ready to give myself up.
Well, why did you come to me, then? Why didn't you go to the police?
Oh, you can talk to somebody like you. The police are always building a case for the estate.
Okay. They'll get you anyway.
Yeah, but you'll know what I really said, see?
All right, go ahead.
His name is Church. Arthur Church.
Who's Arthur Church?
He's the chief pusher for a bigger narcotics outfit than you ever thought there were.
We've had a few cranks in this case already.
I'm no crank. What do you mean, I'm a... Alice Turner was carrying the stuff for him. She wanted to get out. Church wouldn't let her. So she got smart and set up a meeting with a federal man the other night. And that's why she was killed and all the rest of them, too.
Doesn't make sense. If she'd made this date, don't you think the federal authorities would have been in on this?
Well, she didn't tell them who she was or what she did.
How do you know all
that? I'm the one that told her Church was on to her. I told her to drop it. Sure, and not to go. That's my part of it. I told her Church was on to it and that he'd stop her somewhere. I told her to drop it, no matter what.
I don't like it. No. Why would she put Shirley Goodhue on the spot?
Alice didn't know what would happen. I did. Who could know that he'd do anything like this?
Well, why did he? If what you say is true, he could have stopped her some other way.
That's my doing, too. I kept her out of sight, you see, and the other night I told her not to do anything, to stay where she was, and not to go to the field, and then she believed me. And then she called Shirley Goodhue and told her she was sick, and that's why she didn't go.
Do you know where the explosive was that wrecked the plane?
Yes, as I read today, the first aid kit. That's where Alice carried the stuff.
And it was her kit. How did the Goodhue girl get it?
Yeah, because she was called at the last minute, you see, and Alice had her things in a locker at the field. Look, Mr. Dollar, I wouldn't be here if I wasn't telling the truth. It's a peddling rap for me, don't you see? But I've been reading these stories about the people that get killed and the families that are left, and I couldn't take it. I knew the truth, and then when Alice was killed, well, there was no reason for me not telling what I knew.
Are you ready to go to the police?
You heard what I got to say. I'm giving myself up, so...
You know where this Arthur Church is?
Yes, yes, yes. He and I live together.
And you'll come with us?
If I have to. Yes, yes, yes. I'll take you up to him. This is where I left him.
You go in, then. Tell him who's here.
Just call him next room.
Art. Oh, Art. Oh, Art. Are you here?
I'm here, yes.
Oh, out of the way. I got him.
Expense account item 2, miscellaneous, $23.45. Expense account total, $25.95. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
The makers of Camel Cigarettes present Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Steady pack after pack smoking is the only sensible way to tell how a cigarette will get along with your throat. In a test from coast to coast, hundreds of people smoked only Camels for 30 days. Noted throat specialists made weekly examinations and reported not one single case of throat irritation due to smoking Camels. Make your own Camel 30-day test. Smoke only Camels for 30 days. See how well Camels agree with your throat, pack after pack, week after week. Here transcribed is Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency.
Help.
Rick, what's the matter?
Just that, Helen, dear. Help. I haven't had a client in 3 weeks.
Oh, well, I'll take you to dinner tonight and fatten you up.
No, I'm not hungry. You couldn't just send the money, could you?
No, go ahead and starve. Ferdy Parker asked me to dinner anyway. You remember Ferdy.
Oh, sure, your old boyfriend, the very old one.
Rick Ferdy's really a very nice boy. Plays polo divinely.
So do horses.
Do I go out with Ferdy or don't I?
Helen, and lose the chance of watching me stuff myself? Now, you tell Ferdy you've got to do some research on a tapeworm. I'll see you in 10 minutes. Bye.
Bye.
Diamond?
That's right, but I'm leaving now. Come back tomorrow.
This won't wait till tomorrow. My name's Duke Crandall.
How do you do?
Pretty well in the dark.
Rick, dear, I know it's a nasty habit, but I get so annoyed when people keep me waiting over an hour.
Oh, hello, Helen. Yeah. Well, I took a nap.
That's nice. Bye.
Honey, now wait a minute. 13 guys just beat me up.
What did he look like?
Well, he was very big and it was dark and I couldn't see him.
Maybe it was Ferdy Parker. He's really a brute at heart.
No, this guy was breathing.
Rick, did someone really hit you?
Honey, I may be kidding, but this bump on my head isn't.
But why? The man didn't just walk in and hit you for no reason at all, did he?
No, it's a hobby.
Rick.
Helen, if you don't believe me, just sit tight. I'm going down to the 5th Precinct to see Walt Levinson. I'll drop around and show you my bruises.
Hello, Rick. How's the... Well, what happened to you?
I got engaged. She was lovely. Use gunpowder.
Better get a beefsteak for that eye.
My eye's not hungry. What I want now is to find a guy, Walt.
Who?
Said his name was Duke Crandall.
Crandall? We've been looking for the Duke ever since he jumped bail on a blackmail charge.
Oh? Know where he is now?
If we did, he'd be in jail. How'd you get mixed up with him?
I wish I knew. He just came into the office and sold me a fistful of dreams.
You, sure it was the Duke? What'd he look like?
Or couldn't see him too well in the dark. He was a big guy. Wore a flashy plaid overcoat.
Yeah, the overcoat fits. Duke's a natty dresser. You can look over his record for yourself, Rick.
No. So you're looking for this guy?
Yeah, he's somewhere in the city. It's anybody's guess where.
What about this blackmail charge?
He was bleeding a city official. Duke used to work for Benny Rathman, the gambler. Some think Benny was behind it, but Duke's the only one we could grab off.
Mm. Who put up his bail? Rathman?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Until now, we thought maybe Benny had killed Duke after he bailed him out, so he couldn't pin the job on him. Here's the package.
Don't worry, he's still alive. I got the bruises to prove it. What about this Benny Rathman? You think he'd know where Duke is?
Hard to say. If he did, I think he'd try and get rid of him. See, the DA's been trying to pin something on Ben for a long time. And if we find Duke and Benny is implicated in the blackmail, it'll be the DA's meat.
Oh, I catch. So if Duke's smart, he let Benny bail him out and then goes in hiding before Benny can get to him.
Uh-huh.
That'll make him twice as hard to find.
You're really going looking for him, huh?
Yeah, might as well. I don't mind getting slugged, but I'd like to know the reason why. Thanks, Walt. I left the Fifth Precinct and hailed a cab. The fresh air made my head feel better, but my pride hurt all the way to the Blue Chip Club, owned and operated by Benny Rathman. As we pulled up, I lit a Camel, came to a little, and when I walked inside the club, I found a dissipated pianist playing worn-out love songs on a worn-out piano.
Hi.
Hi.
Like my playing?
Not particularly.
Me neither.
Your boss around?
Maybe.
Back room?
Maybe.
Alone?
Again, maybe.
Thanks for the brilliant conversation. Maybe.
I enjoyed it.
Hey.
Hello, Benny.
Well, Diamond. Don't you ever knock?
Only a gender, I mean.
Well, grab a chair. Not every day we get a visit from thee, Richard Diamond.
I'll roll down your sleeves. Your goosebumps are showing.
I'm allergic to stupid remarks.
Benny, Duke Crandall used to be on your payroll. Where is he now?
Looking for the Duke, eh? Now, that's a coincidence. So am I.
And you just don't happen to know where he is, huh?
That's right. I put a bail for Duke and then he skipped. I don't like that.
Go on.
That's all. Duke cost me a lot of money. Yeah, I'd sure like to have a little chat with him.
Mm-hmm. Only I bet Duke would wind up speechless. You know, if he's caught, you'll be in hot water, Benny.
So, I've been in hot water before.
Not recently, I'll bet.
Keep it up. I may grow to hate you.
I'll work on it.
Look, Diamond, that blackmail wraps all Dukes. I'm an honest businessman.
For that line, you should be a comedian. Benny, Did Duke ever mention my name around here?
Maybe. He used to swear a lot.
Oh, very funny.
Why all this interest in Duke, Snooper?
I owe him something, that's all. I'd like to pay my debts.
Oh, gee, I'm sure sorry I can't help you, pal.
Save the tears till I leave, Benny.
Wait a minute. Here.
What's this?
The address of Duke's old girlfriend. Name's Patty Carroll. She won't talk to me, but maybe she'll help you.
Well, it's worth a try.
And if you should locate the Duke, let me know, huh? I'd still like to have that little talk with him.
Maybe I will, if he's in any condition to talk. I left the Blue Chip and went across town to the flat of one Patty Carroll. Benny described her as a one-time girlfriend of Duke's, and when she opened the door, I had respect for Duke's taste. She had the kind of figure that drives architects mad, and any other type of man, too, for that matter.
Hi. You the television man?
Do I look like a television man?
How should I know? You're cute.
Well, thanks. So are you.
I guess they could have cute television men.
I don't see why not. But I'm not one of them.
Oh, shoot. 3 days I've been waiting for that set.
Heartbreaking.
Ain't it, though? My brother says, Patty, that's my name, Patty. He says you got to get a television set, see a lot of educational programs and such. He says it makes you appreciate the finer things in life.
Yeah, like radio.
So I get me a television set, but the guy ain't shown up yet. What do you want?
Well, I'm glad you got around to that. Honey, I want to want a little information.
I'm no library.
I'm no bookworm. Mind if I come in?
All depends. You a gentleman?
All depends. I eat with a fork.
You sure look all right. Only I wish you were the television man.
Patty, at times, so do I.
Now, what's on your mind?
Duke Crandall.
Oh, you must be a cop then. Hey, I like cops. I used to think it was fun to date hoods, but my brother says, Patty, that's what he calls me. Patty, he says, you gotta quit running around with the hoods. So now I like cops.
Very commendable change.
Yeah. Hoods are always getting sent to prison. And who did you say you were looking for?
Duke Crandall.
Oh, yeah. I used to date Duke, till my brother said...
Where's Duke now, Patty?
I don't know. We broke up, Duke and me. He was always slapping me and ruining my makeup.
Look, honey, think hard, will you? Do you know any of Duke's friends who might know where he is now?
Let me see. Yeah, I know one guy, Joey Thompson. Him and Duke used to play cards every Friday.
Where does Thompson live?
How should I know?
Oh, just wishful thinking. Mind if I use your phone?
I guess not. Only don't be long. The television man might be trying to call me.
This'll only take a minute.
Homicide, Lieutenant Levinson.
Well, I got a problem. Oh. You know a guy named Joey Thompson?
Thompson? I know a Charlie. Oh, yeah, yeah, Joe Thompson. Yeah, I know him. Used to be a small-time pickpocket.
Where can I get in touch with him?
Last I heard, he had a legit job. Runs a watch repair shop on Fountain Street. You can get the address in the phone book.
Thanks, Walt. Call you later if anything develops. And thank you, Patty.
You leaving? Don't you want to stay and watch television when it gets here?
Oh, no, thanks. No. All that violence makes me nervous.
Well, drop in again anytime.
Hoppy goes on at 8, doesn't he? Patty had few brains and many curves and was the type you hated to leave. But Joey Thompson might lead me to Duke Crandall. And curves can be dangerous if you don't watch your speed, I always say. The hall outside Patty's rock, and as I walked down it, I had the strangest feeling that someone was behind me. 2 seconds later, the strange feeling became one I was thoroughly familiar with. Oh, the wall spun around and I spun with them. But on the way down, I caught sight of what had hit me. An ugly blackjack held by an ugly hand sticking out of the prettiest plaid overcoat you ever saw.
Before we continue with Richard Diamond, here is an important question. Will one puff or one sniff tell you how mild a cigarette is? No, but steady smoking will. Try Camels for 30 days as your steady smoke. Enjoy Camels' rich, full flavor. Let your throat tell you how mild Camels are. Pack after pack, week after week. Hundreds of men and women from coast to coast made the Camel 30-day test under the supervision of leading throat specialists who examined their throats every week. Those throat specialists reported not one single case of throat irritation due to smoking Camels. Start your own Camel 30-day test tonight. You'll get day-in, day-out proof of Camel's mildness and flavor. And you'll know why, after all the mildness testing of recent years, Camel leads all other brands in popularity by billions.
How mild can a cigarette be? For Camels and sea.
And now, back to Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
At approximately 5 p.m., I had been worked over by a man named Duke Crandall, wearing a plaid overcoat. 1 hour later, I received the second installment, again by the man in the plaid overcoat. Monotonous? You know it.
Hey. Mm. Hey, wake up.
Oh.
Come on, that's a boy. You all right?
Oh, yeah. Well, my head feels like a mashed potato.
I heard the noise outside. You shouldn't lie around on the floor.
Yeah, I know.
So I dragged you in here.
Oh, thank you, Patty. I'll remember you in my will, which may be in effect before long.
Who slugged you?
Your old boyfriend, Duke Crandall.
Ooh, that bully. What's he got against you?
That's what I want to find out.
Yeah. Let me fix that ice pack.
No thanks, honey.
Hey, now you shouldn't get up now.
I know. I like to show off. Where's your phone book?
Over there.
Thanks. Now, let's see. Patty, what does T come after?
I should know.
Here it is. Thompson Watch Repair, 19 Fountain Street.
You gonna see Joey?
That's the general idea.
I bet he won't talk to you. He can smell a cop a mile away.
Well, they can't shoot me for trying. On second thought, maybe they can.
Besides, maybe Duke ain't even in town. Maybe he's gone back to Arkansas.
No, he's still around. What did you say?
I said maybe Duke's gone back to Arkansas. That's where he came from.
Does Joey Thompson know that?
I guess so. Duke's always blowing about it.
Thanks again, Patty.
Okay. Say, you ain't gonna drive in that condition, are you?
Of course. I'm too dizzy to walk. I stepped out into the hall. This time, I looked carefully around to make sure no plaid overcoats were following me. The hall was empty, and immediately my head felt better. 10 minutes later, I arrived at Joey's watch repair shop on Fountain Street. I stopped outside, pulled my pants up too high, turned my hat rim back, and then went in.
Yeah, what can I do for you?
Well, my name's Harold Appelknocker from Big Lake, Arkansas.
Oh, how are you, Mr. Applesocker?
Appelknocker, Harold.
Oh. Well, you got a watch?
Watch? Nope, never use them. Down home, we go by the sun and the hogs. When the sun's straight up, it's noon, and when the hogs holler, it's dinner time.
Now, look, pal, we don't repair hogs. Now, what do you want?
Well, sir, I'm looking for a fella named Crandall. What's that fella's first name? Something like Prince or King or... I don't know. It's one of them royalty fellas.
Duke, maybe?
That's it. Duke. That's the fella.
You got the wrong place. Now beat it.
Oh, doggone it. That's what everybody tells me. Sure wish I could find that fella, give him his money, and go back home. The city life is killing me.
Did you say money?
Yeah, that's what I said. Money. Plain as could be. You see, my cousin Josh is one of them lawyer fellas, and this Duke fella's uncle died and left him some money. Uncle Josh sent me up here to find him, and doggone, I sure wish I could.
How much money?
Friend, I don't rightly know. But Uncle Josh says it's enough to buy a poke of pigs, 2 or 3 farms.
That'd be a lot, huh?
Sure would be, friend, sure would be.
Duke could use some dough. Yeah, sure you're on the level?
Well, I think so. Had to come up a hill to get here, but I do believe
never
that...
Never mind. You got the money for Duke?
Nope, but I got this here paper I'm supposed to watch him sign, and then Uncle Josh will send him the money.
Well, wait a minute. You stay right there.
So far, so good. Joey went into the back room, and I heard him dial. I couldn't hear the conversation, but I knew he was talking to Duke. 2 minutes later, he came back out.
Okay, pal. I'll take you to Duke.
Why, now, that'd be right neighborly. Only I don't want to take you away from your work, and you just tell me where I can find him.
Duke says to bring you. The shop will keep. Now move.
Joey locked the door, and then we went to his car and drove to the warehouse section. He pulled up in front of a deserted warehouse, stopped, and blew his horn twice. Pretty soon, a big man wearing striped trousers and a loud check sport coat came out of the warehouse and over to the car. This had to be Duke Crandall.
This is the guy, Joey?
Yeah, Duke.
Okay, Hicks, start talking.
Appelknocker, Harold Appelknocker.
You dropped that business. You told Joey my uncle left me some dough. Well, you ain't got an uncle, friend.
No, I was afraid of that.
Yeah. Now, what's your name?
How about a Swedish dialect? Got any uncles in Sweden?
You see, Duke... I told you over the phone he was a fake.
Yeah, it's good work, Joey. Now get out, bud. I want to know why you were looking for me.
I didn't know where you were.
Get out, he said.
All right.
Maybe somebody followed this bird, Joey. Drive back up the alley and keep a lookout. I'll take care of him.
Right, Duke.
In the warehouse, Buster. That's good. Now you better tell me what's your angle.
I suppose you tell me first.
I don't get you.
Turn on a light. My name's Diamond, remember? The guy you nominated for a punching bag.
You don't make sense.
What?
I don't know anyone named Diamond. Where are your lights? I still don't know you.
You stand there and tell me you've never seen me before?
Yeah, that's right. I suppose you do some talking.
Well, all I know is that a guy in a plaid overcoat came into my office and said he was Duke Crandall. Then he sapped me. An hour later, the same guy in the same overcoat repeated the process.
So you came looking for me?
That's it.
Well, it's too bad. I'm going to have to take care of you, Diamond. You might just mention where I'm hiding.
Oh. Then Benny Rathman's really after you, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad that you had to stumble into this.
Well, I guess it just ain't my day.
This is a lonely place. Let's get it over. Wait a minute. Must be Joey. Hey, Joey. Joey!
Joey's taking a little nap, Duke.
What?
Don't turn this way with that gun or you'll be a dead man.
The man with the threat was Benny Rathman, standing in the doorway with a .45 in his hand. And what interested me was his wearing apparel, a flashy plaid overcoat.
Well, Duke, you picked a nice hideaway. And thanks, Diamond.
For whatever you mean, you're not welcome.
For finding Duke, smart boy. You see, I knew you'd never take my money if I tried to hire you to find him. So I posed as him in this overcoat. I knew you'd get mad enough and look for him on your own.
Well, aren't you cute?
Thanks. It was easy. Tailed you, and you brought me right here.
Hey, look, Benny, let's talk all this over, eh? I wasn't gonna rat on you. Hey, look, I'll even take the rap on that blackmail charge.
Okay, but... I like you, but business is business.
But
I... No buts, Stokey. Now you, Diamond.
I was afraid you'd get around to that. But then I'm not really worried. You're not a very good shot, even at close range.
What?
You didn't even kill Duke. Get him, Duke! The ruse worked, and Benny turned around quickly. He was too far away for me to lunge at him, so I grabbed the next best thing, the light switch.
All right, Diamond. I should have expected some trick from you, but I've got lots of time. You've got no gun. Let's play cat and mouse, huh?
I crouched behind some crates as Benny came closer. He was right about the gun. I felt as helpless as a rabbit in a traffic jam. And then I noticed there were three crates piled on top of the one I was behind. It was a long chance, but better than none at all. Benny got closer, and I waited.
It'll be soon, Diamond. I'm getting accustomed to the dark now. I'll find that light switch soon, and I'll get you...
The crates hit Benny and knocked him off balance. I raced out and lunged in the general vicinity of a plaid overcoat. My left hand caught a flabby stomach, and the gun went clattering to the floor. Then my free right hand went hunting for a bobbing head. It found it. All right, Benny, get up.
Oh.
I beg your pardon?
Oh.
And I'll quote you on that. Now then, upsy-daisy. Attaboy.
Oh, my head.
Hurts, doesn't it? But you know, Benny, you hit me twice today, and I've only hit you once. Now, that's hardly fair, is it?
How's your eye?
Oh, still at half mast.
Here, put this steak on it.
That? That's a whole cow. You could feed a family with that thing.
Now stop clowning and put it on your eye.
All right.
Notice anything different?
Yeah, it covers my whole face.
No. I mean about me.
Hmm? No. New dress?
Mm-mm.
Mm. New hairdo?
Mm-mm.
Well, you're too young for new teeth. I give up.
New perfume. Smell.
Nice. Yeah. What's the occasion?
Oh, after you broke the dinner date, Ferdy Parker dropped in for a little while.
Oh, good for Ferdy. Did he make it under his own steam?
Oh, Rick, aren't you even a little bit jealous?
Of course not, honey. I'm broad-minded.
You mean thick-skulled.
Oh, Helen, dear, I was only kidding. I noticed something different as soon as I came in.
Oh?
Yeah. You finally got your piano tuned.
Rick!
When we are dancing and you're dangerously near me, I get ideas. I get ideas. I want to hold you so much closer than I dare to.
I want to scold you cause I care more than I care to. And when you touch me in this fire in every finger, I get ideas. Oh, I get ideas. And after we have kissed goodnight and still you linger, I kind of think you get ideas too. Your eyes are always saying the things you're never saying. I only hope they're saying that you could love me too. For that's the whole idea, it's true. That lovely idea that I've fallen in love with you.
Rick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also wearing a new lipstick.
Why, Helen, aren't we full of surprises tonight? Come here. And people feel sorry for me when I get beat up.
Dick Powell will return in just a minute. Camels lead all other brands in popularity by billions. And here's the reason.
Millions of Americans have discovered Camel's rich, delightful flavor. A flavor no other cigarette has. They found out how mild Camels are. How well Camels agree with their throats.
Start enjoying the cigarette that's enjoyed most in America. Start enjoying mild, flavorful Camels tonight.
How mild, how mild, how mild, how mild, how mild can a cigarette be? Make the Camel 30-day test and you'll see. Smoke Camels and see.
Here's Dick Powell with a special message.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in 1952, as in the past, the makers of Camels will continue to send thousands of packs of Camels to hospitalized men and women of the armed forces every week. This week, the gift Camels go to Veterans Hospitals, Wichita, Kansas, and Montgomery, Alabama. U.S. Army Station Hospital, Fort Custer, Michigan. U.S. Naval Hospital, Pensacola, Florida. And to the Military Air Transport Service, which evacuates virtually all overseas wounded personnel. Now until next week, enjoy Camels. I always do.
Dick Powell can now be seen starring in the Universal International film You Never Can Tell. Tonight's transcribed adventure of Richard Diamond was written by Dick Carr with music by Frank Worth. Our director was Nat Wolf. Virginia Gregg played the part of Helen Asher. Alan Reed was Lieutenant Levinson. Others in the cast were Herb Butterfield, Sidney Miller, Sandra Gould, and Sheldon Leonard.
There's more genuine pipe-smoking pleasure in Prince Albert. Let the singers tell you why.
The bite is out and the pleasure's in when you smoke Prince Albert. It's specially treated not to bite your tongue. The bite is out and the pleasure's in.
Pack your pipe with Prince Albert, the national joy smoke. The bite's out and the pleasure's in. And now there's more tobacco in every tin.
Listen next week for another exciting adventure of Richard Diamond, starring Dick Powell. This is your FBI. The official broadcast from the files of the FBI follows immediately. Stay tuned. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is the American Broadcasting Company.
That's Case Closed for this week. I hope you enjoyed the shows today. You can find more from Johnny Dollar, Richard Diamond, Case Closed, and everything else Relic Radio at the website relicradio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is there. And our donate button if you'd like to help support it all. Your support makes all of this possible. My thanks as always to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.